Today's topic is the mitzvah of tzedakah. In Shulchan Aruch Yerodeh, there are three volumes. The Hilchos Tzedakah appears in the middle of the third volume. The third volume begins with the laws of Nedarim and Shavuos. And a good one major aspect of tzedakah is that the person pledges to give tzedakah. That's a neder l'dvar mitzvah. He has to fulfill his pledge. That's why they put Hilchos Tzedakah in the third Chelek Yerodeh, following Hilchos Nedarim and Shavuos. The Shulchan Aruch quotes in Reish Mem Tes Sif Beis. Shulchan Aruch quotes Megemara in the first Perek in Bava Basra that the minimum amount of money one has to give each year in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Tzedakah is Shlishis HaShekel. Where do they get the magical number Shlishis HaShekel from thin air? So the Gemara bases it on a pasuk in Ezra, where it says that when they came back in the beginning of the Baisheni, at the end of the 7 years of Golus Babel, they rebuilt the second Beis Hamikdash, they rebuilt Yerushalayim, and everybody accepted upon themselves to give a minimum of Shlishis HaShekel. So the Gemara says it can't be referring to Machzis HaShekel. Machzis HaShekel was an obligation that all the Jewish men have to give Machzis HaShekel in order to fund the Korbanos Tzibur that are brought in the Beis Hamikdash. You can't have one balabas donate $5 million to cover the whole expense of all the Korbanos Tzibur. You're not yotzei by that. The only way to fulfill the minimum Musafim that are brought every day and the Musafim that are brought on Shabbos and Yom Tov and Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed is only if they're paid for by the Machzis HaShekel money. The Machzis HaShekel is the half a shekel. So what does this correspond to? The pasuk says that they accepted upon themselves to give a Shlishis HaShekel every year. So the Gemara understands that that's the minimum amount that you have to give to tzedakah. If you give less than Shlishis HaShekel every year, you're simply not yet to the mitzvah of tzedakah. The Shach lived in Vilna and killed the Chemalnitsky pogroms. Then he ran away. All the Rabbanim ran away. Everybody ran away. Many were killed. So the Shach lived in Vilna. So he writes that the meaning in Vilna was that the Gabbai would go around with a pushka only twice a week, only on Monday and Thursday, in chakras to collect stuff. So he wonders, what is that based on? Is there a bigger mitzvah to give charity and to give tzedakah on Mondays and Thursdays? He's guessing, so he's trying to reconstruct. So he thinks that the smallest coin that they had, let's say here in America, would be a penny. So the smallest coin that they had in Vilna at the time was so valuable that if you would give every Monday and Thursday every week, except for Yom Tov, it would turn out that he gave a little bit more than a Shlishis HaShekel. So he's guessing, he says, maybe that's the reason why they had instituted such a practice, only to collect twice a week, Monday, nothing special about Monday and Thursday, but twice a week to collect in order that everyone will give. If everybody gives a penny each time the Gabbai goes around, so they will have fulfilled their minimum obligation of giving a Shlishis HaShekel. Now this Shlishis HaShekel, that's the minimum. That's the minimum, that's the bare minimum. That if you give less than that, if not some pachis bin zel waki and mitzvah tzedakah, the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Gemara, it's simply not in the fulfillment of the mitzvah. And if you gave a shlishis HaShekel, a man is a multimillionaire, he gives a shlishis HaShekel, he gives $3, and he's yotzei the mitzvah of tzedakah. So we have different kinds of mitzvahs in the Chumash. You have a mitzvah of lulav, and a mitzvah of sukkah, and a mitzvah of tefillin. The mitzvah is the same whether you're the Vilna Goyen or you're a simple laborer. You have to eat matzah, you have to shake the lulav. It doesn't matter who you are. You do the mitzvah the same way. Then there's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. So the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, you can fulfill the mitzvah of Talmud Torah by learning Ois Achas, by learning one letter of Torah. The Mishnah says that David HaMelech was respectful of the one who taught him Shnei Dinim. He only learned two Dinim. I already forgot from who, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos quote. And he was respectful of that Rebbe who only taught him two dinim. Kal v'chaymer, if somebody teaches someone else Perek Echad, a Mishnah Achas, a Halacha Achas, a Afilo Ois Achas, the Mishnah say, he taught him one letter of the Aleph Beis, that's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. You have to respect him because he's considered your Rebbe. So you see from the Mishnah that learning Ois Achas is considered a Kiyum HaMitzvah of Talmud Torah. We have an assumption that the Tefillin Shel Rosh has a higher level of Kedusha than Tefillin Shel Yad. The Gemara makes that statement. Why does has the exact same thing? As the Dalit Parsha, Shema V'Hayom Shema Kadesh V'Hayom Ki V'Yachol. So why did the Tefillin have a higher level of Kedusha? So the simple explanation is because the Tefillin, how much Kedusha different Parshias have depends on how many Psukim you have written. For example, we assume that Tefillin have a higher level of Kedusha than Mezuzah. Because Mezuzah only has Shema V'Hayom Shemaya. and the Tefillin have Shema B'Hayom Shema plus Kadesh V'Yakiv Yach. Sefer Torah has all the four parashiyos plus many, many more. The Rambam sounds like he writes in Hilchos Sefer Torah, the end of Hilchos Sefer Torah, if one would discover the original author's copy of the Aseres Adibros, engraved by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, so that would be priceless. To discover the Aseres Adibros, still a normal Sefer Torah that was just written this year will have more Kedushin than the Aseres Adibros. Why? Because the normal Sefer Torah contains the Aseres Adibros plus many, many more parashiyos. What level of Kedusha you have, Tashmishi Kedusha, are a function of Divrei Torah being written, and the more psukim you have, so the more kedusha you're going to have. So Sefer Torah has more kedusha than Tefillin Shel Rosh. Tefillin Shel Rosh has more kedusha than Tefillin Shel Yad because it has a shin on the outside. It has one letter more. One letter is more Divrei Torah, and therefore it has a higher level of kedusha. Tefillin Shel Yad has more kedusha than mezuzah because the mezuzah only has the two parashas. So you see that learning Ois Achas is considered a mitzvah tam ter. What if a guy has no problems of parnasa and he has good head and he has a lot of time on his hands and he only learns Ois Achas every day? He's not in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. The obligation to learn Torah depends on how much time you have on your hands, how talented you are, how bright the person is, and and how much he can understand. So if a person doesn't have to work so hard every day, he has a lot of time. The obligation is to learn every free minute of the day. If a person has to go to work, so it's not free time. If a person has to go to sleep, you don't tell me you should have a nervous breakdown. You should learn all day and all night. It's understood. He has to lead a normal life. And every free moment that he has, he's obligated to learn Torah. So the obligation to learn Torah is not equal to all people. The same thing you have a pasuk in Chumash. When you come to be oile regel on Pesach Shavuos Sukkos, all the Yerokol Zechurcha, the men have an obligation to visit the Azara, visit the Beis HaMikdash. So the Pasuk says that we're obligated to bring Oilus Riyah and Shalmi Chagiga and Shalmi Simcha, three different karbonas. The Gemara in the first parak in Chagiga quotes a Tosefta from Chagiga, the Gimel Mitzvah, the Tzavi Yisrael Bali Yosem Larego. We became obligated to bring one minimum of one of each one of these three karbonas, Oilus Riyah, Shalmi Chagiga, Shalmi Simcha. So the Pasuk says in connection with these karbanos, Ish kimat nas yodai, kevirkas Hashem alakecha shenas nalach. What does it mean? So the Mishnah explains, if a man has a small family and he has an awful lot of money, so what is he going to bring? A lot of shlamim. Shlamim you have to eat. He doesn't have such a big family. Who's going to eat it? So let him bring many oilas. Instead of just bringing one karban oil, let him bring 50 oilas. Ish kimat nas yodai. If a person has a big family, let him bring many shlamim. There are some mitzvahs where you have a minimum. The Mishnah tells you what's the minimum for Oilas Riyah and Shalmi Chagiga. And there is no maximum. It's however much you can afford. That's how much you're obligated to give. So tzedakah is also like that. Shlishis HaShekel is the minimum that if a person is absolutely poor, if he doesn't give a Shlishis HaShekel every single year, so he's not in fulfillment. Lo ki imidei choyves ha-mitzvah. But if he's wealthier, so he should certainly give much more. You're not... If a man is a multi-millionaire, he's not yotze by giving a shlishis hashekel. So how much do you really have to give? So the Gemara never has this idea. Tosfos in Tainus, Tosfos in the first parak of Maseches Tainus quotes a comment from the Sifrei is by the Tanoim. It's like Mishnayos, except the Mishnayos are presented topically. You have all of Hilchos Shabbos in one Masechta, all of Dinei Pesachim in another Masechta, Bava Kamma in another Masechta, and the Sifrei and the Mechilta and the Sifro have all the comments of the Tanoim in the order of the Pesukim. It's the same as Mishnah, it's written by Tanoim and the Seder of the Chumash. So Tosfos quotes a comment from the Sifrei on the Pasuk in Parshas Re'eh, Aserti Aseres Kaltua Zarecha Hayotzei Hasod Deshan Hashon. You have an obligation to be Mafrish Maisa Rishon, Maisa Sheni, from if a person is a farmer in Eretz Yisrael, in Chutz La'aretz you don't have these mitzvahs. This is the mitzvah of Tluyos Ba'aretz. This is an agricultural mitzvah that only applies in Eretz Yisrael, so there's an obligation to be Mafrish Maisris. So the Gemara has a Machlokes Tanoim, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shmuel, and ongoing Machlokes all over Shas, and we follow Rabbi Akiva, that Lo Dibur Torah K'Lashon Bnei Adam. Chumash doesn't write extra words. If it says Aser Ti Aser, it must have some meaning. Why does the verb la'aser repeat it? Why does it say aser ta'aser? Why doesn't it just say aser is kol tvua zarecha, asru kol tvua zarecha? So the Sifrei has a comment on that. Aser te aser is marbe, then not only are you, is the farmer in Eretz Yisrael obligated to be mafrish ma'aser rishon, first you give 2% from a gedolah, then you give 10% of what's left, you give ma'aser rishon, then you give ma'aser sheni. Not only does the farmer have an obligation, the farmer in Eretz Yisrael have an obligation to be mafrish ma'aseris from the tvua that grows in Eretz Yisrael. The ribuy aser te aser comes to teach me that if a person made money in business in a given year, or he leaves the money in a bank, not business, and he gets interest from the bank, so you have to give ma'aser k'sofim. The Sifrei comments, the Sifrei makes such a comment on that post. So this is a big dispute in Shulchan Aruch. You look in the very beginning, the Pischei Tshuva on Siman Resh Mem Ches in Yoredeya quotes a three-way debate, a three-way dispute among the Achronim. Rishonim are involved, and mainly Achronim are involved. Is this drasha of the Sifrei really a drasha gemura d'araisa? This is a din min haTorah, that a person is obligated to give ma'aser k'sofim min haTorah. So the Ravid is of the opinion that it's a din d'araisa. The Ravid learned for Harusa with the Rabbeinu Zrachya Halevi. They learned by the Ravid. There were three people who were known as the Ravid. One of them wrote a history book, so a very poor history book. Say it a Kabbalah, so it's all inaccurate. So he's never quoted in Shulchan Aruch. But then the other two Ravids are quoted. So one Ravid wrote the Sefer HaEshkol. He is known as Rabbein Avram ben Yitzchok, Ab Bezdin of Narbona. He's called the Ravid, Rabbein Avram Ab Bezdin of Narbona. Then the Ravid, the famous Ravid, who wrote the Hasagas on the Rambam, wrote the Tshuvas and the Tmim Day and married his daughter. The Ravid married the daughter of the Ravid. And when he was learning by the father-in-law, he learned Pacharusa with the Baal Amor, the one who wrote the Sefer Amor. Sefer Amor writes that he lived in Lunel. Lunel means the moon. Lunel is a city in Provence. Provence is a little village in between France and Spain, and they were always having wars. Who's going to own that Provence? Who's going to own that area? So sometimes it belonged to France, sometimes it belonged to Spain. Still there. The air section is still there, and the city Lunel is still there. So the Rabbi Mizrahi Halevi wrote his commentary on the Rif, and he calls it after the city that he lives in, he calls it Sefer Amor HaKotan. Amor HaKotan, Amor HaGodol is the sun, Amor HaKotan is the moon. Until he gets to Baba Kama. It's a commentary on the Rif, starting from Brochus, Shabbos, Erev, and so on. When he gets to Baba Kama, he says, Nezikin, you can't really understand just with the light of the moon, you got to have the light of the sun. Nezikin is very complicated, so he calls this Chibur Amor HaGodol. The title changes from the Zikin till the end, till Chulin, it became Amor HaGol. And up until the Zikin, it's called Amor HaKot. So these two used to argue with each other all the time. They rivaled with the Baal Amor. So the Baal Amor has Hasagas on the Sefer Bali HaNefesh written by the Ravid, and the Ravid has Hasagas on the Sefer Amor, which is a Sefer on the Rif, a commentary in Hasagas on the Rif. So we have the Ravid in his Kosov Shom. Every paragraph in the book starts off Kosov Shom. My dear friend Rabbi Mizrahi Halevi wrote in his commentary on the Rif in the Sefer Amor, he quotes what he says and he always disagrees. Either he disagrees or he says he stole it from me. It's mine. A strange start. That's the way they used to write. Like the same, the way the Ravid writes Hasagas on the Rambam, very sharp. He always doesn't know what in the world he's talking about, absolutely ridiculous. That was the style that they wrote. So the Ravid in his commentary on the Rabbi Mizrahi Halevi and the Sefer Amor sounds like he holds that the din of ma'aser k'sofim is a din d'araisa. That's an unusual position. That opinion is not really accepted. The only thing that's really in the running is the other two opinions. We assume that the drosha of the Sifrei Aser Te Aser, that it's written twice to be marba ma'aser k'sofim, not only the farmer has to be mafrish ma'aseris on the peres that grow in Eretz Yisrael, but a businessman has to be mafrish ma'aseris on the revach and on the ribis that he gets. So we assume it's only a rasmach, that's not a din d'araisa, but the question is it a din d'rabbanan, or is it even less than that? So basically, we really paskin, it's not even a din d'rabbanan. We generally assume that ma'aser k'sofim is a minik toiv. It's a midas chasidus. It's recommended. If a person can afford to give ma'aser k'sofim, matov, he should give it. I remember the mashgiach in the yeshiva, when I was a student, used to be Rabbi Lessi. So he used to walk over to, when a boy would get married in the kolo, so he would walk over to the boy 2 weeks after he got married, and then he would give him a speech, and he would encourage the boy, make sure you take your wife for a walk once in a while. He thought that it's like in Slavotka, where he came from, that the boys were sitting and learning all day and all night, and they forgot that they got married. So he encouraged them, make sure you take your doggy for a walk once in a while. And then he said, and make sure, don't you dare give Maisek Sofim. It'll just be matriarch, your parents and your in-laws, to give you more support. Maisek Sofim is, we assume, that a normal person makes a decent salary, can probably afford to give Maisek Sofim, and that's a significant amount to give. If a person can't afford, he shouldn't give. If a person can afford, if a person is a multimillionaire, he makes a lot of money. I'm not a multimillionaire, but I teach in YU, so I make a fortune of money. So I give way more than Maisek Sofim. So if a person can afford it, he's obligated to give more. The Gemara just says in Ksubas Daf Nun, Be'usha Hiskinu, when the Bez Nagoro went into Golus, the Bai Sheni was Chorev in the year 70 approximately, 69, 70, it's not exactly clear when it was destroyed. So the Mishnah, the Gemara says that 40 years before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Bez Nagoro was supposed to have their offices in the Lishkas HaGazis, in the Beis HaMikdash. Bez Nagoro resigned. They moved out of the Lishkas HaGazis. They felt it's not right. They weren't able to keep to maintain law and order. The Gemara describes there were so many Jewish murderers, gangsters running around. Bez Nagoro wasn't able to maintain law and order, so they felt it's not right that we should sit in the Lishkas HaGazis in the Beis HaMikdash with such big shots. We're the Supreme Court and we're not doing anything to maintain law and order. So they resigned. So they moved into Golis. And then they went from Golis to Golis, Esed Golias, Golis Sanhedrin. They went from city to city. So there was a period of time that they were in Tveria, and Ushon, and Sipori, and Shfarom, all different cities in the Galil. So the Gemara says, Bu'usha Hiskinu, when the Bez Nagoro was in Golis in the city Usha, they made a takana. If a person wants to give charity, you shouldn't give more than 1/5 of his total income. Because Shemi Yayani with Starach Labrias. What do you mean? He's going to give away all of the money that he has. So he's going to become poor. So what do you gain by giving tzedakah if you're going to make yourself poor? That's ridiculous. Then Yerushalmi explains this wasn't the Takana de Rabbanon that was discovered, that was invented by the Holchei Usha, by the Sanhedrin, when they lived when they were located in the city Usha. This was really a din deraisa. And they popularized it at that time. And then the Gemara says also in Ksubas that that halacha b'usha his kina hamavaz v'zal yivaz v'ziyasim mechemish, you're not allowed to give more than chaymish. I happen to give way more than chaymish. I don't need so much money. Most people don't need so much money. Most people make enough money that they can give way more than chaymish. So Tosis says if you're really doing well, it's permissible to give more than chaymish. Then because the whole reason is Shema Yayani v'itztarach labrius. If you're going to have then have a lot of savings even with giving more than chaymish, so you should give more than chaymish. Then the Gemara says, this din, you're not allowed to give more than 1/5 of your annual earnings, that's only what calls man that you're alive. What if a person is making out a will, and he writes in the will, he wants to leave a lot of money to charity, he wants to leave 30% of all of his assets to charity, 40%. So the Gemara says there's no concern Shema Yayani on his deathbed. He doesn't need the money. What if he wants to give 100% to charity? He doesn't want to leave any money over for his Yarshim. So the Gemara says in Yesh Nachlan and Baba Basa, that's not right. You're not allowed to be Mavra Nachlo from your children. And even if you don't get along with your children so much, unfortunately, there are parents who don't get along with their children for whatever reason. The Gemara says it's not right to be Mavra Nachlo. And if a man wants to be Mavra Nachlo, don't you be the lawyer to help him write the will, and don't you be the witnesses to sign on the bottom, and don't you be the secretary to type it up. You stay away, don't get involved. The Gemara tells the story. There was a Tana Yosef ben Yoezer who lived in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. So he had a son who was a nice religious balabas. He davened every day, Kershon Shabbos, and he learned Daf Yomim, but he wasn't a Tana. So the father was upset why his son didn't become a Tana. His son wasn't interested, not mechuyav to become a Tana, to sit and learn all day and all night. He went into business, so the father was so upset that he, on his deathbed, he donated all of his money to the Beis HaMikdash. And the Tanoim told him, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to be Mama Nachli, you have to leave Yerusha for your son. He was so upset. So the Gemara says that he did wrong, you're not allowed to do that. So the question is, you can't give anything to charity. No, but the Gemara says in Ksubis you're permitted to give more than chaymish. On your deathbed, you're allowed to give more than chaymish. So when are you in violation of this din of being mavra nachla, and when is it permissible? So there's a big dispute in Chosha Mishpat, in Hilchas Yerusha. There's a big machlekes. So some achrayim are of the opinion you have to leave more than 50% for the Yorshim. You can give 49% away to charity, but you have to leave 51% for the Yorshim. There's a popular set of Svarim that's called Gesher HaChayim, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Tikhachinsky. He must have died 70 years ago in Eretz Yisrael. He was famous for different things. He's famous. He wrote this from Gesher HaChayim has all Hilchas Avelis with all Minhagi Yerushalayim, Minhagi Eretz Yisrael. So a lot of people like to use, has everything organized in a nice fashion. So in the introduction to the Sefer written by his son, so the son writes, when my father passed away, he followed all of his psukim. So he didn't have so much money. So he gave away 49% to tzedakah and 51% he left for the children. As he writes in his Sefer, you got to leave 51% for the Yorshim. If you live right for the Yorshim, then you're not in violation of being Mavan Nachlam. And then as he was about to die, so he said they should open the window and light a candle and do whatever the Minhagim are when a person is about to die. So that was, he followed that opinion. You got to leave 51% to the Yorshim. That's a popular opinion because a lot of people have that set of Svarim, the Gesher HaChayim. The Chasam Sefer disagrees, and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein paskens like the Chasam Sefer. If a fellow is a multimillionaire, he doesn't have to leave 51%. He has millions of dollars in the bank. He doesn't have to leave 51% to his children. As long as he leaves a significant amount to each one of the children, that's good enough. What is considered a significant amount? So at the time that Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote the tshuva, so I think he wrote $10,000 was a significant amount. $10,000 today is like $5. It's not so significant. So in each generation, whatever is a significant amount is acceptable. That's what's usually assumed, like Rav Moshe Feinstein said. If you leave a significant amount for the Yorshim, then you're not in violation of being Mavi Nachlam. And then there's the opinion of the Gaonim that the Sefer HaChoshen quotes, but is not accepted la'alocha. As long as you leave $10 for the Yorshim, that's enough. You can give all the $5 billion away to charity. As long as you leave $10 for Yorshim, that's good enough. So most of the Poskim have not accepted that, even though the Gaonim say that.
When you passed away, you weren't so rich, you only had like $5,000. Do you have to give all $5,000 to your children?
Yeah. It's not right to give away to tzedakah. Probably. Probably a little bit. I imagine Rav Moshe would also agree. 49% you can give away to tzedakah. But if you want to give more than 50%, he probably means also like that. Up until half, you can give to tzedakah. If you want to give more than half, so he says, it's permissible provided that you leave a lot for the earth. So if you only have $5,000 to begin with, in the summer, $2,400 you can give to tzedakah. And the rest you should leave for the earth. He would probably agree to that. There is a Sefer Birkei Yosef written by the Chido. The Chido lived in the 1700s. The Chido, Reb Chaim Yosef David Azulai, lived in Eretz Yisrael. He was a mishuloch for the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. So he traveled all over Europe to raise money for the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, for the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. So wherever he went, he would always check all the local libraries. Whenever he would find a new ksav yad, he discovered a lot of kisvei yad of the Meiri and other kisvei yad from many rishonim in the library. So he would copy down. Here and there, he would copy the whole Sefer, he would copy a few chiddushim. He wrote many, many, many svarim. I don't know, 70, 80 svarim. If you want to have all the svarim, it's a whole bookcase. That was the generation, the 1700s, when the Jews started writing encyclopedias. So he wrote a few encyclopedias. Halacha, and Midrash HaTorah Nidresh Espem, and Agadah, and Kabbalah, all kinds of encyclopedias. Others also wrote encyclopedias then, in the 1700s. So the Chidah, in his Birkei Yosef on Hilchas Tzedakah here, quotes from the Shita Mekubetzes. We have the Shita Mekubetzes. At his time, it wasn't available. So he found it in a manuscript somewhere, so he copied this down. Shita Mekubetzes writes on this Gemara in Ksubis on Daf Nun, that even though one is not permitted to give away to Tzedakah, normal person, he's not making so much. Normal person is not proper to give away more than Chaimish, more than one-fifth of his annual income. So that's only if he's giving the money to aniyim. He's giving the money to hospitals. He's giving for bikur cholim, for hachnasas kala, for other things. But if he's giving to support yeshivas, That's a different din, and that you're permitted to give even one chamish. Whatever you feel you can afford, that you're allowed to give. So usually when they make appeals for yeshivas, they'll always mention that. That the Birkei Yosef quotes from the Sheikh and Kubetz and Sansubas that Hamavazal Yvasis Mechemish doesn't apply to supporting Torah. It's a different mitzvah. Supporting Torah is a different mitzvah. It's something different from tzedakah.
It's just another effort. It's not because it's more important than...
No. It's like, let's say, if I live over here and I can't afford a pair of tefillin, so I'll borrow someone else's tefillin every day. I'll borrow someone else's tefillin. But if you live in Alaska and you're the only Jew there, so you got to spend all the money you have in order to have to spend money to get a pair of tefillin. You have to do something to get a pair of tefillin. So he says that's a mitzvah. That's not an inyan of tzedakah. So the Shita Mekubetzah says that supporting Torah, that's a mitzvah. That's not really, like, you got to spend money for tefillin, for mezuzah, for tzitzis, for all the mitzvahs. You got to spend money for supporting Torah. It's important a person has to have the correct attitude when he gives the tzedakah. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us what the correct attitude is. Tein lo mishalo. When you give charity, you should have in mind, as if I'm just an apotropos on the money, as if the money belongs to God. Shato v'shalcho shalohu. You and all of the money that you have and all the talents and all the chachma that you have really belongs to God. V'chein v'david ho'oimer. David HaMelech composed Tehillim. So in Tehillim it says, ki l'cho hakol u'miyotcho nasan aloch. Everything belongs to you, God, and we're just giving you back what belongs to you. So a person should not have the attitude, I earned this money, it's mine, I can do whatever I darn please. The guy decides he's going to found a dog hospital with this tzedakah. He's going to found a mosque in Saudi Arabia. You have no right to use the money for whatever purposes you want. There are rules and regulations how you're supposed to spend the money. Koyde Matan Torah. It was a different story. The Mishnah also says in Pirkei Avos, the beginning of Pishnah is Pirkei Avos, the second Mishnah, Al Shlosha Dvarim Ha'olam Ha'omed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world for three purposes, Al HaTorah Ve'al HaAvodah Ve'al Gemilas Chasadim. The Ibbono Shel Olam wanted people to learn Torah, wanted people to do Gemilas Chasadim, wanted people to be Makriv Karbonos. Avodah means Hakrovos HaKarbonos. Rav Chaim Volozhiner has in his commentary on Pirkei Avos on that Mishnah that Koydem Matan Torah, the Avodah with the Gemilas Chasadim didn't have to be regulated by the Torah. Let's say Gemilas Chasadim would consist of the following. Someone wants me to give him a loan. He goes to the bank and the bank wants 15% interest on a loan. Can't afford that. So the guy comes to me and says, do me a favor, lend me some money and charge me less than 15%. So I lend him the money with 1% interest. A big toiva. So Kodem Matan Torah, that's a mitzvah. I did Milas Lassan. I lent him the loan for much less interest than the bank would charge. After Matan Torah, even if you charge a tenth of a percent, it's an Issa Ribbis. You're not allowed to. In the same thing, avoid the hakrovas hakarbonos. Kodem Matan Torah, you can make a mizbeach wherever you want and offer karbonos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not l'avodah zarah. After Matan Torah, so the Torah regulates the avoidah. You cannot build a mizbeach and bring karbonos wherever you want. There's an isur shchut echutz. Once you have the Beis HaMikdash, it was built in Yerushalayim. So the Mishnah says, Yerushalayim, ein acharei hetah, there's no longer any hetah bamas. That's what Rav Chaim Volozhiner points out. That Kodem Matan Torah, the gemilus chasadim, was an independent inyan, and avoda hakrovas hakarbonos was an independent mitzvah. Lacha matan Torah, nitan Torah minischat shalocha, so the gemilas chasadim and the avoda have to be regulated by the Torah. So the same is true regarding tzedakah. Kodem matan Torah, you can fulfill tzedakah by spending your money however you please. You had a Torah, so not to spend however you want. Lacha matan Torah, so the Gemara has and the Shulchan Aruch has in Mereish Lunala, you have a whole state of kedimas. There are rules and regulations. How are you supposed to give your money to charity? You can't just decide, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. We have to treat the money as if we're up to troops the money, as if it's not our money. Tein lo mishalo, ato b'shalcho shalo. V'chein b'dovin ho'emer, ki l'cho ha'kol l'miyotcho nasan alof. Just as a footnote, there was in Europe, there was a Hebrew writer who wrote a whole book in Hebrew, and he dedicated it to somebody, and he writes, ki l'cho ha'kol l'miyotcho nasan alof. So when he printed the book, the people didn't understand what he meant until 50 years later. He stole the whole book from the other guy. The other guy printed a book, in a different language. And this character lifted the whole book, and he wrote over the whole thing in Hebrew. And instead of saying that he's just translating, he put his name on it. He writes, he dedicates it to Peres. It was his book. He plagiarized the whole book from the beginning to the end. That's not right. So in the Pasuk, it means, everything belongs to God. When we give charity, when we donate karbanos, we're not donating from ours, we're giving back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu what he gave us that we should supervise. We're considered like apotropsim on the money. So what are the Seder Kedimas? So the Shulchan Aruch has a whole siman, Reish Nun Aleph, quoting from Gemaras in different places. The first klal is that Mishpacha comes first. The Pasuk says you have to give Li'achecha, La'aniyecha, or Li'avyoncha Asher Bi'artzecha. So Li'achecha means you have to give to family members first. If all the family members are taken care of, so then you have to give to Aniya Yircha, the poor who live in your city. If all the people who live in your city are taken care of, so then you have to give to Aniya Yiracheres, to Aniyim in another city. When you're giving to Aniyim in another city, so then it says in the Shulchan Aruch, based on the Sifrei, on that Pasuk, that giving tzedakah, Pesach Tiftachas Yodcha La'aniyecha La'avyoncha Asher Bi'artzecha, Bi'artzecha means Aniya Yeretz Yisrael take precedence to Aniyim from other countries. Aniya Yeretz do not take precedence to Aniya Yircha. That's not true. The stock organizations in Eretz Yisrael print this in the newspapers. Rabbi Al-Yashiv said it's a lie. Rabbi Al-Yashiv doesn't say things against the Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Al-Yashiv is an old man, but he knows very well what it says in Shulchan Aruch. It says in Shulchan Aruch, Aniya Yircha take precedence to Aniya Eretz Yisrael. When all Aniya Yircha are taken care of, and you have to give to Aniya from other cities, Aniya Eretz Yisrael take precedence to Aniyim from Australia, or Aniyim from institutions from England, or from South America, they come collecting. So Aniya Eretz Yisrael take precedence. The Chasam Sofer has a famous tshuva, where he writes, Aniya Yerushalayim take precedence to Aniyim and the rest of Eretz Yisrael. And he writes that during his lifetime, in the middle 1800s, there was some kind of an earthquake in Tzfat, I think. And he attributes it to the fact that the Jews were violating this din. Instead of giving more money to the Aniyim and Yerushalayim, they'd be giving more money to the Aniyim and Tzvat. So he says, that's Keneged Adin. He's supposed to give, the Seder Kedimas has it, the Aniyim and Yerushalayim take precedence to the Aniyim and the rest of Eretz Yisrael.
Does that mean that we have more responsibility to take care of like the Aniyim in Washington Heights?
So that's the question, what's the definition of Aniya Yircha? Anyone who's Tocha Tchum is Aniya Yircha. So that's the end of the story. Sof Pasuk, that's the end of the story. You've got to give all the money to the Aniya Yircha. So the Pashto says the definition of Aniya Yircha probably doesn't mean your city. You live in such a big metropolis. You have, how many people in New York? 9 million, 8 million people. It used to be 9 million people in New York. It probably doesn't mean that. Aniya Yircha probably means the Aniyim whom you associate with. There are a lot of Aniyim in the neighborhood. I don't even know who they are. It means the Aniyim whom I know who they are. Or let's say the yeshivas where my children study, or where my children-in-law study, or where my grandchildren study. So the people or the institutions that I have a shachas to, so that's called Aniya Yircha. Or let's say a fellow is one of the major supporters of one of the big yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, and that's his pet charity. That's also like Aniya Yircha. That's his cause, his Aniyim. Either his Aniyim because he associates with these poor people, or his mikveh. There are many mikvahs in New York. My wife doesn't use every mikveh. She uses one mikveh. So that mikveh, that's Aniya Yircha. And the shul, not mechuyev to support all the shul. The shul's b'rayt daven, that's Aniya Yircha. And the institutions, the yeshivas, where my children and my children-in-law, my grandchildren study, so that's Aniya Yircha. I don't think it does mean Aniya Yircha, literally Yircha. I mean, those Aniyim are institutions that you have a shaykhes with.
What's sufficient to know when the community's been supporting to start going beyond? How is one supposed to know?
One's supposed to know what?
That the community's been supported, they can go beyond the borders, to go to other countries or other people from different places. How does one know that, you know, that what they've given is sufficient?
Whether what I gave is sufficient?
I mean, how is that measured? Rebbe was saying that, you know, the first is in Mishpacha, then comes the name in the city.
So they say over here, what does it mean, Kedimas? First comes Mishpacha, and then comes Aniya Yircha, then comes Aniya Eretz Yisrael, and then comes the rest. So what does it mean? If my Mishpacha needs, I don't give a penny to anybody else. So the Pischei Tshuva quotes from Nechran, it doesn't mean like that. Here there are two versions of what it does mean. So the Pischei Tshuva says, you should designate let's say I know roughly how much money I'm going to earn in the course of the year, how much money I earned in the past year, let's say. So 3/4 of that money, up until 3/4, goes to the mishpacha. And the rest goes to everybody else. The next one is aniyah ircha. So up until 3/4 of what's left goes to aniyah ircha, and 1/4 goes to everybody else. In my mishpacha, Baruch Hashem, we don't have any aniyah. So nothing goes. So all the money goes next step. So you give 3/4 goes to aniyah ircha. If they really need all of that, if all the institutions that I have a shaitas with need all of that money, look, I'm not mechayiv to support the whole yeshiva single-handedly. There are many people who are indebted to give, so I'll give my share. That's how the Pesachei Tshuva quotes it. 3/4 to the first one if they need up until 3/4, and 1/4 should be divided the rest. Rav Moshe Feinstein doesn't agree with the 3/4 and 1/4. He thinks that's a little too much. He thinks it's 2/3 and 1/3. He says 2/3 should go to aniyei mishpachtecha, and 1/3 for the rest, up until 2/3. And if they don't need so much, so whatever is left is 2/3 for the Yircha, and 1/3 for the Yeracher. So of course, the commentaries on the bottom of the page, Pesachei Tshuva points out, let's say the Aniyim, there are Aniyim in Australia who don't have any bread to eat. Aniyim in Yerushalayim, in Eretz Yisrael, they don't have any food to eat. They're drinking water, and they're eating stale bread and water, have nothing to eat. Aniyah Yircha need a second pair of Shabbos shoes. So of course, the Aniyim who, when we say it's 2/3 and 1/3, or 3/4 and 1/4, that's if they're all on the same level, everybody's starving. Or everybody has food, everybody needs clothing. Everybody has clothing, everybody needs Shabbos dikah clothing. So if everybody's on the same level, so then you have a Seder Kedimus. Mishpacha, Aniyah Yircha, Aniyah Yeretz Yisrael, Aniyah Sharmikadimus. But if their needs are greater, they need food and clothing, and the people on the Yircha don't need food and clothing, so then they take Kedima. It's quite a juggling act. It's a complicated cheshbon over here. But you're not allowed to just ignore this, because we're supposed to treat the money as if we're only up a trupsim. We don't really have the right to act with Tovus on, I'm going to give whatever I want to whomever I want. You have no right to do that.
Then is someone who gives charities, are they responsible to make sure the money goes to the hands of somebody, or is it okay to spread a check to your charitable foundation on a yearly basis and distribute it, you know, every 5 years when they choose? That
would be great if you can give all the money to a tzedakah organization where there's a Talmid Chacham running the show and he's determining how to divide it. That's in some communities they do that. You give the money to the shul and the rabbi of the shul has the headache. He has to figure out how to divide the money.
No, some people have foundations but they write a check every year. So if that money is actually given out on a yearly basis, is that okay? Even though that's giving it to them because they can't use it.
I mean, how long do you have to give the money?
Right. I mean,
let's say a fellow made $1 million this year. And he doesn't want to give all the money this year. He wants to take time in order. Next year he's going to have time to figure out how to divide. So this is an interesting question. This was raised in the Shadrach Chuvah's Nadi Behuda. They asked him that question. They asked him about Maisa Ksofim. When you have to give, we recommend Aminik Toiv, Aminis Chasidis to give 1/10 of your annual earnings to tzedakah. So how do you calculate 1/10 of your annual earnings in this year? When is the year from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah? I think he says Tu Bishvat to Tu Bishvat. That was the question, when is it? So they sent him a shayla, he didn't answer. Then they sent him again. He says, I didn't answer because the whole topic of Maisa Ksofim doesn't appear in the Talmud anywhere. The whole source is the Tosis and Tainis B'Shem HaSifrei, the comment on the Pasuk HaSeh Taseh. So he writes, Ein darki lichtov tshuva, he doesn't like to write a tshuva on a topic with no gemara. Whatever you're going to say is going to be svaras hakeres, a boich svar. It's not going to be serious. In learning, everything has to be based on sources. He says, there are no sources over here. So how are you going to figure out what it is? So that's what that's a question. How do you determine what is the cutoff point of the year to establish how much money is the Maisa Ksofim? And how long do you have to give the money? You have to give it before the end of the year, or do you have a while? Do you have a while to give it? So some say that just like there's a din of Oynes HaMaisris, the years are divided into cycles of Shemitah, every 70 year of Shemitah. So the farmer has Trumas and Maisris all set aside every year. So he has to give everything away. If you're not going to give it away fast, it's going to spoil. So of course he has to give it away. Let's say he has some fruits or vegetables, not going to spoil. So how soon does he have to give it away? So the Pesukim say, Pesach of the fourth year and Pesach of the seventh year, the Shemitah year, is called Shas Habir. You have to give everything away by then. So that's what some of the poskim say with respect to the tzedakah also. When you are mafresh ma'aser, it's like a Shas Habir for ma'aser, just like there's a Shas Habir for ma'aser and Paris that grow in Eretz Yisrael, so too they suggest maybe there's a Shas Habir for the ma'aser k'sofim as well. It's not reasonable to tell a guy he has to give away all the ma'aser k'sofim right now. He doesn't really know how to weigh and balance. He has to figure out which charity is more, more valuable than which. He wants to divide the charity with sechel. So you take a little more time till you figure out how to divide the charity. In the Shulchan Aruch, they quote a medrash. There was a Tana Rabbi Yossi, famous Tana Rabbi Yossi, who got divorced from his wife. So after he divorced his wife, he used to still support her, not because of alimony. He gave her tzedakah, and he said, the pasuk says, "Mipsoch al tisalo." One's former wife is also considered like a relative. That's called aniye achecha. Mishpacha comes first, so the ex-wife is also considered mishpacha. Unfortunately, that's usually not the case. Usually when people get divorced, they don't want to hear at all from the former wife. So in the Shulchan Aruch, they quote that. The Mepharshim quote that the ex-wife is considered the b'msorcha al tisalom, and there's a kedima, she's in the first group of kedima to give tzedakah.
Does this apply to, let's say you have a week off and you're gonna dedicate your time to something? Does it also apply that, you know, your first obligation is in your community, in your city? Or if not, that doesn't apply at all?
You know, I'm gonna do kiruv work or something?
No, and volunteer work, let's say for a week,
volunteer
a week
work.
Of vacation. Is like, you know, the obligation to help your city first, does that also fall into that?
If he would prefer, he needs a vacation, he wants to get away from his city. So he can't fault them. People want to change. People need a change. Preferable would be, you should, but if he feels that he needs a change, I don't think it's mukhif to suffer, to stay behind in his own city.
Let's argue, we're going to touch on this. What about the halakhos of who gets first within the city? Is it first in, someone who can't afford food, and how does that?
Right, whoever is greater in need. So you have a whole hierarchy. This guy needs food. This guy needs clothing. This guy has clothing. He needs Shabbos clothing. So whoever is a greater nitzra, they have to give them.
As far as like those needs, where does like supporting Torah, like giving donations for tuition, fall into that, or like for yeshivas?
Well, tuition is not a donation.
I mean, like, no, it's like to help, like
you got to pay tuition.
Like helping like yeshivas and schools, like
helping yeshivas is a very important stuff. Yeah. That's even more than chamish. That's what the Rishonim say in the Shittim Kubetz. You got to support the yeshivas even more than chamish. That's a big crisis right now, because Eretz Yisrael is draining all the money from New York and New Jersey, and they're not supporting the local yeshivas and the local girls' schools. So it's scandalous. The local institutions are holding by collapsing, and the yeshivas and Eretz Yisrael building marble floors, building palaces there. They're draining all the money. It's not right. They're not allowed to take money. So they say, Rabbi Yashiv said. Well, Yashin never said it, and it's against the Shulchan Aruch. It says, Ani Eretz Yisrael do not take precedence over on the local institutions take precedence over the Eretz Yisraelic institutions. There is a Gemara Bava Kamma in the first parak, and Taisus points this out on that Gemara, that the obligation to give tzedakah to an ani is only if it's not his fault. But there are people, they decided they don't want to work for a living, they want to go around collecting money. That's your decision. You want to be poor. I'm not mechuyev to support you. If tragedy occurred and you lost your wealth and you became sick, then there's an obligation to help the guy. If the guy decided, maybe, I also don't want to work for a living. I'm not mechuyev to work to support him.
There are thousands of people like that.
So you're not obligated to give them a pay.
Sure, often we're not. If they're just coming, so we decided to. Just sit and learn all day, and we can't afford to.
I'd like to sit and learn all day also.
So I'm not mechuyev. As explained before, Robert, yeah. So for someone else who it doesn't work for?
Not mechuyev. Let him go get a job. Let him go get a job. You were strictly speaking, you're not mechuyev to support these people.
And I mean, and all these rabbanim allow that. And there are thousands of people that.
It's ridiculous. Then is you're not mechuyev. It's a Gemara. You're not mechuyev to give them money. If they decided they want to lead a life of poverty, This was never a Jewish attitude. This is a Christian attitude. Some of the Christian clergymen have to take an oath of poverty. Others don't take an oath of poverty, but they consider it a milah to be poor. By the Jews, that was never considered a milah to be poor. We consider a milah, a person should learn, even if he's not making a fortune of money. But a mitzvah to live in poverty, that's ridiculous. The Jews always held from making a living. This whole attitude, that's a big mitzvah to live in poverty, this was taken, borrowed from the Christians. We should give it back to the Christians. It was never a Jew. It's not a hashkafa in Yiddishkeit.
What about a parish?
A parish? So let him make a living. I'm not mechuyif to support. Not mechuyif to support him. Unless he's really such a big Talmid Chacham that the whole world is going to be nana from his learning. Or he's such a great tzaddik, so he's one of the Lamed Bab Tzaddikim who keep the world going. Okay, maybe. Okay. But strictly speaking, you're not mechuyif. One of my sons-in-law learned America's Harav. He's an Israeli. So he told me, Rabbi Avram Shapira used to be the Rosh Yeshiva. The one passed away just 2 years ago. He used to be the former chief rabbi at Eretz Yisrael for 10 years, and he was the Rosh Yeshiva in Merkaz for many years. So they asked him about the Bachar and Yeshiva, asked him about these Anim who schlep around from all day long, they go from one place to the other collecting tzedakah. Are you obligated to give them tzedakah? So he said, it says in Shulchan Aruch that you're only considered an Ani if you don't have a steady income and you don't have Masayim Zuz in the bank. If you have Masayim Zuz is the amount of money Bizman HaGemara that you would need to live on for a whole year. So today it would be a lot of money. How much do you need to live on a whole year? I don't know. $30,000, I don't know. Got to figure it out. How much you need to live on for a year? So if you have that amount of money in the bank, or you have nothing in the bank, then you have a steady income. So you're not considered an Ani. So Rabbi Avram was very sharp. He had a good sense of humor. So he said, these guys have a steady income. They go around schlepping money. It's not mechuyif to give them any tzedakah. They're not anim. They're ashir. They have a steady income. You're not mechuyif. The Rambam quotes the pasuk from Mishlei that reads, Al Yoshev Dach Nichlom. When a dach, when a poor person comes and he asks for an adoba, so you're not allowed to turn him away. Even though you've already apportioned, you already figured out your 2/3 and your 1/3, you're giving to this one, that one, the other one, but you got to give him something. So you give him a dollar, give him half a dollar, give him a nickel, you have to give him something. So this is only, whenever an Ani comes, you have to give him. Unless he made a decision he wants to be an Ani, then the Gemara says you're not mechuyif to give. The Gemara Baba Kama says you're not mechuyif. If it's his own fault that he's an Ani, not mechuyif to help. So this din, al yoshev dach nichlam, al pipash, this only applies if the person comes and he's asking money for himself. He says, I need money. But if he's coming to collect for an institution, so you're not mechuyif to give. Then you have a toivus hanoi, you have a right to choose. Let's say the many yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. Why should I support the anti-Zionist yeshivas? I may as well support the Zionist yeshivas. Or if I'm an anti-Zionist, why should I support the Zionist yeshivas? I want to support the Naturekati yeshivas. So then you do have a toivus hanoi. You have a right to give to whichever yeshiva you want. The big issue halacha lemaisa always comes up every so often. Sometimes comes up by reform and conservative Jews. They only go to shul, some of them only go to shul 3 days a year. 2 days Rosh Hashanah, 1 day Yom Kippur. So let's say on Yom Kippur he took a pledge and then he's not going to come to shul till next Rosh Hashanah. So all year long he doesn't think of paying up the pledge. He pledged to give $5,000 to whatever charity it is. Then he drops dead in the middle of the year and he didn't give the $5,000. So when a person pledges to give money to tzedakah, that's a neder tzedakah. So there's a mitzvah while you're alive to fulfill your neder. Motzvah sasecha tishma v'yasisa kasha nadarta l'ashem alakecha nidova kasha dibarta v'fil. It's a whole pasuk in Parshas Re'eh. Maybe it's not in Parshas, it's in Devarim somewhere. So Kozman, the person is alive, so he's obligated to fulfill his neder. What if the guy dies and he never paid the money? So even if the children will pay the $5,000 from the Yerusha, the father is not, they can't help the father to be Yetzer the Mitzvah. The father died, he didn't give the money. So he's not Yetzer the Mitzvah of Neder. So the question is, are the children Mechuyiv to pay the pledge at all? Are they Mechuyiv to pay the pledge? So if a person pledges to Hegdish, we have a klal. If you pledge money to Gavoa means Hegdish. If you pledge money to Hegdish, that's considered like a kinyan, even though no kinyan was made. And there's a shibud. So even if you die and you didn't pay the money while you were alive and you have not fulfilled the mitzvah of Motzu Sesecha Tishma V'Yasisa, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Nidrei Tzedakah, of fulfilling your nether, but there's a shibud on the assets, on the nechasim, so the Yorshim have to pay the pledge. The question is, does Amirasa L'Gavoya Kimsirasa L'Hed Yedami apply to Tzedakah or not? Is Tzedakah treated like Hegdish or is Tzedakah not treated like Hegdish? So this is interesting. This was a famous dispute in the middle 1500s. This is a dispute between Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Ramo, who lived in two different countries. Rabbi Yosef Karo lived in Eretz Yisrael in Tzfat, and the Ramo lived in Krakow, in Poland. So they corresponded with each other. So you have the tshuvas of the Ramo and the tshuvas of Rabbi Yosef Karo. Vesikara thought that Amirasa la Gavoya doesn't only apply to Hegdish, Gavoya is Hegdish, it even applies to Tzedakah. So the man who died, who never fulfilled his pledge, so the Yorshim who get the Yerusha, there's a Shibud, there's a lien on the Yerusha, on the assets, they mechuyev to pay the pledge that the father accepted. And the Rama and his Tshuvas disagreed. In the letter that he sent to Rabbi Yosikara, he disagreed. How do we paskan halacha lamaisa? So the Chasam, the Pesachei Tshuva discusses this in Yerideya as well as in Chashim Mishpat. It's discussed in both places. Pesachei Tshuva quotes a big dispute. So many Achrayim say, well, we usually follow the Ramah. Ashkenazim, I don't know what everybody else, Ashkenazim usually follow the Ramah. The Ramah says you don't apply Amirasa L'Gavaya to Tzedakah. So the Chasam Sefer is quoted from a Tshuva. He says, no, the Ramah also agrees. Everybody agrees. And that is a popular opinion. That even the Ramah, even though in the Tshuvas of Ramah he says Amirasa L'Gavaya does not apply to Tzedakah, many assume that we don't follow that Ramah, that we really assume Amirasa L'Gavaya does apply to Tzedakah, and it would be a Shibud, it would be a lien on the assets of the fellow who died, and the Yorshim would have to give the money to the Tzedakah organization. Last year before the summer, not last year, Tavshin Samachtes, okay, last year. There was a man who pledged to give some significant amount of money to the local yeshiva, and he was a healthy man. He didn't expect to die, and all of a sudden he died. And his son is not observant, so the son was not interested in honoring the pledge of the father. But the man left assets, and the son has another two sisters. So strictly speaking, the son gets the whole Yerushin, and the sisters don't get any Yerushin. And there are sons and daughters, so the sons get. There's only one son. So the son is not observant. So he decided he's going to divide the Yerushin into three parts. He's going to give each one of the other two sisters one third. So he's going to make out a check to each one of the sisters after he ascertains what the whole value of all of the property is. He's going to make out a check. So one of the sisters was extremely observant, very religious. So she had a shayla. Is she obligated to give one third of the father's pledge? All of the father's pledge? Because her sister and her brother are not going to give a penny. They're not observant. Or none of the father's pledge. What's the din? Is she mechuyev to give one third? Because she only got one third. She mechuyev to give all. She not mechuyev to give anything. So the pashtus is that the son really got the whole Yerusha. So even if you hold that there is a shiva nechasim amirasa l'gavah kimsirasa l'hed yadami applies to tzedakah, like the Beis Yosef right in the tshuva, and like the Chasam Sefer says, that it does apply, like Rabbi Chaim Moses says also, paskins l'alach amirasa l'gavah does apply to tzedakah. Yeah, amirasa l'gavah means that there's a shibud, there's a lien on the assets that the son got the Yerusha. He's not giving one third of the assets to the sister. He's making out a check to the sister. So the check is not really the asset. The shibud is on the property that the son has. So strictly speaking, the sister is takanat mukhayef to give anything. But the sister is not poor. So the rabbanim recommended that the sister, if she'll agree, it's a nice idea. She should honor the father's full pledge. But strictly speaking, she probably didn't have to. I mentioned Rabbi Chaim Moser assumes lahalacha like the Chasam Sefer and like Rabbi Yosef Karo's tshuva that Amirasa L'Gavaya does apply to Tzedakah. Where is this Rabbi Chaim Moser? So Rabbi Chaim Moser has a tshuva. Rabbi Chaim Moser was a major posek in Vilna, and he died in the middle of the Second World War in 1940, 1940, 1941, I'm not sure when he died. So he has three volumes of Achiezer, Tshuvas Achiezer. When you tour Vilna, they show you where he lived. He lived on the second floor, and they show you where his porch was, that people would see him. They would walk in the street, they would see Chaim Eiser learning on his porch. So Rav Chaim Eiser has a tshuva where he talks about making out wills. A person makes out a will that after I die, they should divide the money like this, that, and the other. So strictly speaking, the will is not really binding. So if there are children, the children have a chiyuv kibbutz to listen to what the parents instructed them. Let's say there are no children, and the closest relatives are cousins or whatever, brothers, other relatives. So there is no din of kibbutz. So strictly speaking, if the fellow who died left a will that's not in accordance with halacha, so they're not obligated to observe the will. So if a person, we have a din in the Gemara, mitzvah l'kayem divrames. If a person gives me an amount of money and he tells me, you hold on to this money, and after I die, you give this money to so-and-so. So then you apply the rule, midrabbanan, mitzvah l'kayem divrames. But Tosfos says, and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, Tosfos in Gittin, Daf Yud Gimel, said, that's only if hushlosh mitchila l'kach. If he gave me the money in advance, or he put the money in away, he put the money away in a special account for that person. So that's hushlosh mitchila l'kach. But if the person just leaves the will, upon my death, I want to give $50,000 to this good friend of mine, and $50,000 to that good friend, and so on. But that's not. But he never set aside the money. He just writes in his will how much he wants to give. So the rule of mitzvah l'kayem divrames does not apply in such a situation. Rav Chaim Eiser writes, what if a person left such a will, he wants to give so much money to this stock and to that stock and to the other stock. Rav Chaim Eiser says that since, he assumes a double pashut, since with respect to tzedakah, we have the rule of amirasa lagavoya, kimisirasa lehedyadami, so you don't have to have luhushlish metchila lakach. Even if you didn't give the money over to another party, amirasa lagavoya, just saying it is considered as if he gave it over. So whatever he said in his will, his oral will, or biksav, with respect to tzedakah, has to be added. So Rav Chaim Eiser obviously assumed that amirasa lagavoya does apply to tzedakah. That's the Beis Yosef's psak. That's the Chasam Sofer's psak. You know, from other issues, let's say, they made an appeal in shul, and some people are calling out their pledges, and other people are not calling out pledges. So let's say a neder or a shvuah is only binding if the person says it with his lips. The pasuk says, "Chumish nefesh kisi shova lebatei b'sfasai." That's the pasuk in Parshas Vayikra. Chumish Vayikra, Parshas Vayikra. Nefesh kisi shova lebatei b'sfasai. So the Gemara says, even Goma believe, even I made up my mind, absolutely, this is what I want to accept upon myself, it's not binding. Tzorch lo etzeh b'svasav. Kolzman, you didn't pronounce the neder or the shvul with your lips, so it's not binding. So the Gemara says, there is, however, an exception to the rule, Hegdish. Because you have a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, Sefer Divrei Hayamim, where it reads that when they built the first Beis HaMikdash, kol nediv lev oyles heviu, whoever had pledged in their heart to bring a korban oyle to the Beis HaMikdash, brought the karbanos. You see that in Div Lev, a person who pledges in his heart is also obligated to fulfill that pledge. So there was a big machlekes in the Rishonim. What about for tzedakah? Let's say they're making an appeal in shul, and I made up my mind I'm going to give $100. And then afterwards, I changed my mind. I want to give $10. I want to give $50. You say that, Amir, do you say that Kol Nediv Leibodos Haviyu only applies to Hegdish, or does it even carry over to Tzedakah, because I treat Tzedakah like Hegdish? So that's a machlokes in Hilchas Tzedakah in Yeridei Anachoshim Mishpat, and the accepted psak in the Ramah, I don't know if it's Sfardim, I don't know if it's Ashkenazim, the accepted psak is that it is binding. That just like by Hegdish there's a Div Nediv, there is a din of Kol Nediv Leibodos Haviyu, so by Tzedakah is, but Tzedakah is treated like Hegdish. Rabbi Baruch Ber, in his Sefer on the Dorim, quotes from the Shittim Kubetzis on the Dorim. Let's say they're making an appeal. And the fellow starts off this appeal, and I say, wow, it sounds like, I think in my mind, it sounds like such a good cause. I think I'm going to give $1,000. Then he keeps on talking. I say, no, what, $1,000? Not such a value, I give $100. Then by the time he finishes, I'm down to $5. I'm not going to give $100 either. So the Rabbi Baruch Ber in the Sefer on Birch HaShmuel, and the Dorim quotes the Shidim Kubet, that's not called Nediv Leibodos Haviyu. Nediv Leibodos means If really Goma believe a Hechlit, he made up his mind that that's what he's going to give. But if he keeps on fluctuating, every half a minute, he maybe I'll give $1,000. And he says, no, it's not worth $1,000. I'll give $100. No, I'll give $10. If he keeps on changing his mind, so then you don't apply cold and deep labor to this idea. It's only if he actually was Hechlit Beliba, if he really made up his mind. In Hilchas, in the Dorim, it says that a person gets an aliyah and he says a mishaberach, and then he says bavur shenodar lebeis haknesses, bavur shenodar tzedok, and he didn't designate how much. So how much do you have to give? So if you had in mind how much you're going to give, so that's how the nether was vague, bavur shiten lebeis haknesses, bavur shiten tzedok. But if you had in mind, you give that. Well, if he wasn't thinking at the time, just said bavur shiten tzedok, and he wasn't even thinking how much. So it's in the Shulchan Aruch, you have to give the maximum that you possibly could have ever had in mind to give. What's the most that you ever gave when you got an aliyah? So you got to give that amount. So that's why they recommend the Shulchan Aruch. Best is, whenever they say Mishaberach, and you're going to say a vague nether, tzedakah, you're not going to say how much, you should always have in mind some small amount. So if you want to give more gezintah, hey, you should always have in mind the small amount. So when you give that amount, you'll be covered. They tell a story about Rav Elbel Soloveitchik, who the last several years of his life lived in Yerushalayim. That once he was a very opinionated person. But once a poor man came over to him, and he was insisting that he should give him stock, he refused to give him a penny. And the guy kept on insisting, and he walked away. He's not going to give him a penny. See, people ask, why don't you give him some stock? He says, the man is not poor. How do you know he's not poor? He says he talks with such chutzpah, he knows he's not poor. Because the pasuk says in Mishlei, Tachanunim yedaber rosh. The rosh is the poor man. Speaks with Tachanunim, please give me a handout. But Oshir yana azus. Wealthy people talk with chutzpah, usually. So he says the guy spoke with such chutzpah, he's clearly not a poor man. In Eretz Yisrael, a lot of times they're chatzufim. So if you give a small donation to the yoni, he may throw it back in your face. He may give it back. I remember many years ago, the first time I visited Eretz Yisrael, I was married a few years. We didn't have any children, so we visited Eretz Yisrael, and we were blessed with 9 children, many, many grandchildren. So I remember at that time we spent a lot of time by Rabbeinu Shvinkel. He was connected with the Miri Yeshiva there. So he told me that whenever he gives tzedakah to aniyim in Yerushalayim, he knows that they may throw it back in his face. So he always has in mind, in case they throw it back, he's going to keep it and walk away. Because if you don't have this in mind, he says, it may be an issue of a neder tzedakah. I gave him a dollar, so it's like I took a neder to give a dollar, and he gives it back, so I put it in my pocket, then I use it for my own purposes. So he always had this in mind, in case they give it back, so he's going to take it and walk away with it. It's like he's giving Allah tonight. So that's what I do a lot of times. People come to me, and I give them a check, and they give me back the check. So I rip up the check, and I say, have a nice day. Goodbye. Then they're sitting in my house. I tell them, you don't have permission to sit in my house. You're stealing a gun. You have no right to sit on my furniture. You're trespassing. Please leave my house. But the guy's such a chutzav that he's pressuring me to give more than I plan to give. So I kick him out of the house. Okay, but there is a mitzvah tzedakah. There is a big mitzvah tzedakah. Good.